It's good to be with you all today. We're going to continue our study in the book of Proverbs today, and we're going to be looking at the subject of laziness. Solomon has been spending his time in the book of Proverbs instructing his son the ways of godliness and, I'd say, common sense, so that his son can walk in the ways of the Lord and enjoy a good life now when you abide by God's principles. So this is a topic that sometimes we associate with children needing, and I understand that's sometimes true, but it's not something just for children. We talked a little bit about this topic when we talked about wisdom in the work in our work, and so some of this was applicable to that as well. But Solomon discusses the characteristics of the sluggard. And so the sluggard is well defined in the book of Proverbs. When we think about laziness, like I said, we sometimes think about children. And children start off their life with a tremendous amount of energy. When they start walking, you know, they're hard to keep up with. And we often look at little kids and say, I wish I had could bottle that energy that they have. But something happens in the teenage years and it all goes away. And they don't want to do anything. It's kind of typical as kids get older, then their desire, their energy seems to go away. Maybe there's something physiological about that. But it certainly is something that parents want to teach their children about, you know, working hard and not being lazy and not taking the path of the sluggard. And Solomon, you know, points that out here in the book of Proverbs. And so, as we've done with previous studies, we're going to look at some of the characteristics that Solomon uses to describe this type of person. And if it sounds like something we're familiar with, then we need to have our hearts open to make that kind of change that we need. So first of all, in Proverbs chapter 26, verses 13 through 15, Solomon describes the day in the life of the slacker. Verse 13 says, the sluggard says, there is a lion in the road. There's a lion in the streets. As a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. The sluggard buries his hands in the dish. It wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. Also, chapter 22, verse 13 says, again, that there is a lion outside. I shall be killed in the streets. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 24, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. So, you know, what is described here is a day in the life of the lazy person. That this is a routine that is happening throughout the sluggard's life. And so let's look at a few graphics here that'll help us define that. So, you know, there's a picture of me. as Terrell says that I appear sometimes. So first of all, the sluggard will not get out of bed. And what's interesting is it describes it here as like a door on its hinges. What happens when a door opens? Well, it opens, it closes, it opens, it closes. And so can you imagine that the person in the bed, they're flopping one way, they're flopping the other, they're flopping one way, but they're not making any progress. They're not getting up. And so the description here is like a door on its hinges. It's just flopping back and forth, and the lazy man just keeps rolling over in bed, hitting the snooze alarm. So the picture is that he is hinged to laziness. He's hinged to the bed. And you know, just five more minutes. And I'm not going to tell myself too much on that, but have you ever, you know, set the alarm for a time that you wanted to get up, and then you decided when the alarm, I'm going to set my timer for 30 minutes late. I really don't have to get up this. Or, I did that today, actually. You know, so the alarm goes off, and I thought, I don't really need to get up this early. And so I set the timer for 30 more minutes. So I'm hinged to the bed and don't want to get up. Just, you know, 5 more minutes, just 30 more minutes. And so the idea here is that I don't want to get up and the sluggard is going to sleep the day away. And the other thing that is mentioned here is what he does when he gets out of bed. He looks out the window. I can't go outside. I can't go out there. There's a lion in the street. You know, I need to stay here in my safe, comfy bed because there's something outside that's dangerous. So that, you know, Solomon here is showing that the lazy is going to come up with just any excuse. That we shouldn't take this as that, well, you know, there's a literal lion in the street. You know, it's hyperbole, and he's using this as an extreme example of the lazy person is going to do whatever he can not to do anything. There's a lion in the street. I can't go outside. I'm going to come up with any excuse possible to get out of doing something. And, you know, come up with some kind of extreme excuse. When I was working in Panama City, Florida, at the newspaper, there was a receptionist that she seemed to get sick a lot on Fridays or Mondays. Isn't that weird? You know, always Friday or Mondays that she got sick. And, you know, she would come up with elaborate excuses. And she told us one day in a lot of detail about, you know, the stomach bug that she had and how horrible it was. And it had really gotten her down. And so, you know, that was on a Friday that she was out, and so it's the following week, and then we're talking about later what to get for lunch, and she said, oh, you need to go to Taco Bell because they've got this new burrito that I got on Friday. And I thought, well, that's what everybody wants when they have a stomach bug is, you know, is Taco Bell, because that's going to clear it right up. You know, so it was obvious that she was making excuses up, and the things were not, you know, adding up, and people would see her shopping at the mall on days that she called in sick. But, you know, she always had an excuse as to why she wasn't where she needed to be. And our excuses really, you know, need to stop, is what Solomon is saying. The lazy man is the one who, I can't get out of bed, and I'm like a hinge going back and forth on bed. I try to get up and I look outside, well, It's raining today, I can't go to services. Or it's, you know, and it's amazing to me how many things that we make up excuses when we don't come and worship God when the next day comes Monday and we won't use that same excuse not to go to work. You know, I'm too sick to go to services, but I'm not too sick, you know, to go to work. Or there's 8 people in the house, And one person has a runny nose, so everybody has to stay home to blow the nose of the kid who is sick. And so that means nobody can come to services. And so we see excuses in our lives, and we need to think about those things. And Solomon's saying, don't be like that person who's imagining some wild beast out in the road to keep from doing anything. And what's even worse here is, is what he says about the being too lazy to bring your hand back to your mouth. And so there's the picture that I found to illustrate that. The person who falls asleep while they're eating is what he's saying. They're too lazy to even take care of themselves, much less take care of other things. So the sluggard wastes the day with naps and excuses and why work can't be done, and it just shows the picture of ridiculousness. And I'd say probably nobody thinks of themselves as lazy. If I ask you right now to hold up your hand if you're lazy, and maybe we're too lazy to raise our hand, but but it'd probably be something like this, you know, maybe one person would raise their hand. And but if I was to ask you if you personally knew anybody that was lazy, it would be more like this picture right here. And so all of us would raise our hands. The point is that that there are numerous lazy people in the world. We just don't think we're one of them. Or we have our excuses about the lion in the street or whatever to make excuses for ourselves. Just this past week, when I was recovering from my kidney stone surgery, there was a sales rep that wanted me to be on a Zoom call. It was really important that it was done, you know, the day after my surgery for some reason. So I got on the Zoom call. I wasn't feeling good, but yeah, I made an excuse right off the bat at the beginning of the meeting because I wasn't, you know, feeling like I was real coherent because I was, you know, taking the pain meds. So I told the customer, I said, whatever I say on this call, take it with a grain of salt because I'm on payment. And everybody just kind of got a big laugh out of it. And later in the week, I talked to that customer again to clarify something that we had talked about. And I said, I apologize since I didn't understand this point the first time we talked. She said, that's okay. It was the pain medicine. And so I had, you know, made an excuse there about, well, if this doesn't go well, ha, 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 you know, I'm just not myself. And so I wouldn't say that's a real excuse because it was actually true and I wasn't feeling great. But sometimes we will use excuses all the time to make sure that people know why we're not doing what we ought to do. The point is that there are lots and lots of lazy people in the world, and we need to realize when it's us. And Solomon here, giving us so many scriptures about the way of the lazy person and the danger of being the sluggard, it's something that needs to be paid attention to. So let's look at some of the characteristics of the lazy person. I think one of the things that we mistake about the sluggard is we think, well, they don't want to do anything. You know, they don't have any ambition. They don't have any desire. But Solomon says there is desire in the person that's lazy. Verse 4 of chapter 13, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. And so here it says the lazy person or the sluggard craves, so there is the desire. And so it's a mistake to think that the lazy person doesn't have any desire or any ambition or simply doesn't want anything in life. They do want something, they just don't want to do anything about it. Or they want something, but they don't want to do any work for it. But the appetite there is there. And so you notice here, both the lazy person and the diligent person, which would be the opposite of the lazy person, they both have the desire. They both want something. And so the diligent is richly supplied, obviously, because they are diligent. They are doing something. Proverbs verse 25 of chapter 21, the desire for the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. His hands refuse to labor. And so again, you notice that the lazy person has desire, but it ends in frustration, because the lazy refuses to do the work necessary to make that desire a reality. You know, there's a lot of people in here that were in band. And you know, one of the things that you're always told to do by the band director is to practice. And you need to practice your scales. You need to practice your exercises. And whenever my junior high band director, he would do a challenge, and he wouldn't tell people that he was going to do it. He'd go down the line on the trumpets and say, "Okay, play, Randy, you play this." And he had every person, you know, play an excerpt from a piece or one of the exercises we were supposed to be doing. And he, right there, he would say, "Okay, Randy, you're moving to first chair, and Bob, you're moving to fourth chair." And so he would rearrange the trumpets based on how we had practiced. And so, you know, that made a lot of motivation, you know, for people to practice. So there were some times that I moved up, and there were some times that I moved down based on, you know, how well was doing. But the point here is that you weren't going to do well if you didn't have the desire. But you had. Would everybody in the trumpet line want to be first year? Yes. Could everybody be first year? No. Who was going to do it? Well, the people that had the talent and the desire, and they were practicing, they were doing the things that was required for them to get better. And we understand that in so many areas of our life, that we need to do the work necessary to make that desire a reality. How is it that we can know more about the Scriptures? Well, we could start off by reading them. We could read them over and over. How can you become that person that can quote Scripture off the top of their head? Well, if you've ever had to do any memorization, you had to repeat things over and over until you could say it. And so, it takes practice. Just drove my dad crazy that we could sing every word from every song in Mary Poppins, but we couldn't remember our memory verse. So there were lots of things that he considered to be totally useless, and we could quote every word of every cartoon, but on the spiritual stuff, it wasn't. And so, why was that? Because we were listening to those things over and over. And they had gotten to our head where we could remember those things. So, what is important to you? Well, the lazy man may want the first chair, but he's not going to get it because that's all he does. The only, as far as he gets with that project, is that he wants it, but never does anything to get it. So the other thing that we see that we've already discussed is that the lazy man has a remarkable ability to think up excuses. Verse 13 of chapter 22, the sluggard says, "There is a lion outside, I shall be slain in the streets." And again, it's not that the actual people that were saying these words, but Solomon is showing that the lazy has this great ability to think up 1,000 reasons why something is not going to work. And that I can't go and do that. I can't do these things. And then they actually believe their excuses. So the sluggard or the lazy person searches for any opportunity to get out of work rather than getting work accomplished, and avoids that work. Verse 4 of chapter 20, the sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek harvest and have nothing. Well, what should he expect? You know, if I don't go outside and plant a garden, or if I have a little bit of land and I don't go do anything to it, should I walk outside and expect, you know, a bunch of vegetables to sprout up? No, of course not. That would be ridiculous. And this says the slacker does not plow during planting season, but yet is expecting a harvest. That's not the way that works. So the lazy is making excuses for not plowing during planting season, yet expects a crop even though he didn't do the work. So it's kind of hilarious to read these proverbs until you start realizing that it might be pointing back at you. We see today that we live in a society where people want, they want things, they want provisions, they want possessions, and they're unwilling to work to make those things happen. Yet too often people are given things anyway, even though they didn't do anything for them. And I saw Marie Osmond on an interview just recently, and it was kind of interesting because she told the interviewer that she wasn't leaving anything to her kids. And I thought, well, how horrible. But what she said is that, you know, they're grown up, they're making a living, and they need to rely on themselves. And she was going to give her money to charity, and the kids were not going to be the charity. And I thought, well, you know, that maybe she's got a point there. And you look at those who have done differently, And what happens many times to kids that never had to work for anything in their life because the parents are rich or well off and the kids are handed everything. I know there's exceptions to it, but sometimes that's a recipe for disaster. And she is making an effort to train her kids to work and not expect to get things that they didn't work for. So you argue with that if you want, or say, well, you know, that's, you know, she's got all that money from all the ads that she's doing. Probably so. But she might create a sluggard who wakes up and, oh, well, my last name is Osman, so I should be getting these things. No, you go work. And so you're not going to be able to pay your bills, generally, if you're not working. And so there's an obvious connection here between what you have and what you did to get it. But the sluggard has the remarkable ability to want and want and want and not do anything about it. So the inability to make a decisive start. Proverbs 24, verse 33, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, how long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a robber and want like an old man. So the response of the lazy, the sluggard, is that, oh, I just need a little bit more time to get up and do the work, and rather than start something, the lazy doesn't get anything done. And which brings us to the next point, the inability to bring a task to completion. Proverbs 19, verse 24. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to its mouth. This is probably one of the more humorous of the Proverbs to me, is this picture of somebody that's eating, but they're so lazy they can't even, you know, get the food to their mouth. They put their hand to the task but never finish what it is that they are doing. Proverbs 10, verse 26, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. So that's the person that sends the lazy person to do something, are they expecting that anything's going to happen? The indication here is like they are an irritant to the eyes of the one who is putting their trust in them. And how untrustworthy is the lazy? You can't send them to do an errand because he will not get the job done. I hate to use too many examples about work, in case somebody from my work is listening, but we have a person that if they have to go off and, you know, get some equipment from somewhere else, you know, it's, we know exactly how long it takes to get to another part of town and get back, but they may not, you know, show up for hours, and so the joke is if. If that person needs something, you go get it for them and you bring it back to them, because you do not want them to leave the work site where they are, because you never know when they're going to show back up. And so here is description that Solomon is making here of how untrustworthy the lazy is. You can't send them on errand. They will not get the job done. They're like, you know, smoke to the eyes and vinegar to the teeth. It's irritating is the idea. And Solomon is, you know, describing this, you know, the procrastinator. I saw a friend of mine just this past week said he had been a procrastinator all his life, and he's suddenly going pro. And so he's going to be a procrastinator. You know, it was a stupid joke. But the procrastinator doesn't make a decisive start at anything. I'll do it later. And so we do a great disservice to others when we make light of it, because it's a problem. And so Solomon's saying, yes, it is definitely a problem. It's not just a problem with children. It's a problem with adults as well. And we need, as parents, to train our children not to be lazy, and we need, as adults, not to be lazy as well. So how do we overcome it? Verses 5 through 8, chapter 6. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief or ruler, so she prepares her bread in the summer, gathering food for the winter. And so Solomon instructs his son to go to the ant and learn from its ways. And we're all familiar with the story of the ant and the grasshopper and how the ants were, you know, collecting food for the winter, and the grasshopper, you know, wanted all that. And, you know, if you've seen A Bug's Life, that's the whole plot of Bug's Life. And so, you know, what is it that's so amazing about the ants? Well, if you've seen movies where people have done nature documentaries about the ants, you see how much they're able to lift. You know, you see them with giant leaves that they're able to hold. Let's see, I think I might have a picture of that here. And so you see the ants being able to do that. And so Solomon's saying, you know, look at them. And so I'm not encouraging you to go kick an ant bed, but if you've ever kicked an ant bed before, what happens? Well, they all start scurrying around and they start trying to rebuild what it is that you just destroyed. They're trying to put everything back in place. So Solomon says, go look to the ant. You don't ever, you know, see an ant just sitting around doing nothing when the other ants are running around doing work. So the point here that he wants to learn from the ant, he says they have no prince, no governor, or ruler. What is it that people do when the boss comes around? Oh, the boss is coming, the area supervisor's coming in today. Let's everybody look busy. Why would you have to say that? Because our habit is not to be busy. Our habit is not to look busy. And, you know, we had somebody at EBSCO that was playing solitaire on his computer all the time. We were not allowed to have solitaire on our computers, much less be playing it all the time. So I edited his solitaire icon so that every time he clicked on solitaire, his computer shut down. And he couldn't report it to IT because he couldn't say my solitaire stopped working. He wasn't supposed to have it anyway. So he went for a while. And, of course, I probably couldn't have kept my mouth shut. If I do something like that, I've got to let everybody know how funny I am. And so he did eventually find out that I did that. But, yeah, he wasn't supposed to be playing solitaire. Oh, the supervisor's coming in today. You know, put something up on your screen that, and people will do that on their computers. They have some they can switch back and forth on their screen, so it'll look like they're actually doing work when somebody walks by. The ant is not that way, is what Solomon's saying. The ant doesn't have a supervisor. The ant doesn't have a governor. He doesn't have a prince. Doesn't have anybody there whipping him, making him do work. What he's saying is the ant is a self-starter. The ant is going to do what it is that they should be doing. They have discipline. They have foresight. And so the ant works without oversight, realizing that there is a need to finish the task. So he said, if you want to overcome laziness, consider the ant, you lazy person. One of the translation, the New Living Translation, which is a paraphrase translation, I wouldn't recommend it for all of your study, but I found their translation to be kind of humorous. Take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. That's the way it was translated. And that'd be the way my dad would say it, you know, lazy bones. And we've probably been called that a lot over time. But they have no prince, no governor, or ruler to make them work, you lazy bones. So work and quit making excuses is what Solomon is saying. So, what is the bottom line? Stop thinking about every reason not to do something. Stop thinking of every reason not to work in life, but to work, especially in regards to your spiritual health, in regards to working in the kingdom of God. We often make excuses when it comes to evangelism. And that's a typical one where many people that are otherwise trying to be faithful Christians, but it scares them to death to think about doing something to evangelize. Well, I just don't know enough. Well, we talked about this in our classes when we were going through the book of Acts and looking at those sermons and how they were directed and using those examples to help us when we talk to others. If we know enough, if we knew enough to become Christians ourselves, we at least know that we can express that to someone else. Well, I'm too tired. I'm too busy. I get off work. I just don't want to do that right now. Or I'm too inexperienced. And obviously, how do you get over being inexperienced? The only way to get over being inexperienced is to get experience. And one of the things that terrified me when I first started preaching was not really the preaching, but was teaching Bible class. I would have much rather did a sermon than teach Bible class. But after I did it for a while, it's not a big deal anymore. I'll do either one. Why was I so scared of Bible class? Because what if somebody asked me a question that I didn't know? What if David Oglesby brought up some topic that I had not been prepared for? So David cured me of that. So there's no harm in saying, that's a great question and I don't know the answer, but I'm going to work on that for next time. I learned not to talk off the top of my head if I didn't know what I was talking about. If I didn't know the answer to something, just go on to the next topic and come back to that when I did know something about it. But if I had said, I'm inexperienced, I don't feel comfortable teaching Bible class, we've got plenty of other people that can teach, I'm not going to agree to do that. Would I have ever got any experience? Of course not. So we make excuses as to why we can't do things, but we really need to think about what it is that we're doing. Is it because you really can't or you just don't want to? And usually that's the problem. It's not that you can't, it's that you won't. We can be evangelistic. We can be teachers. We can talk to others about Christ. We can be more faithful if we want to. The other point that we need to finish with here is to start and finish. That we should be people who are starters and finishers. Colossians chapter 3, verses 23 and 24 says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward." What is this saying? It's saying that our work ethic is a reflection upon God. If you're a lazy person at your work and there's a desire to make as much money as you can with doing the least possible amount that you can, God is saying that's not honorable. Whatever you do, do it with the least amount of effort possible. That's not what it says. Whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart, as working for the Lord. Not as men please, not to please your boss, not to please your co-workers, but that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. So really, that's the conclusion of the whole matter here on slothfulness and laziness, is that we're instructed to have a good work ethic in our lives. So we need to teach this to our children, certainly. We certainly need to teach it to ourselves and lead by example in this area in our life, because we are serving God in everything that we do. Not just what we're doing here together, but in every aspect of our lives and how we treat our employer, how we treat others. We are serving God in every aspect of our life. So I hope this will be an encouragement to you, as it is to me, to be a better Christian and not to be lazy, and to do work and keep your commitments. And I hope this will help us. Certainly one of the main things that we always need to be committed to and not procrastinate on is our relationship with God. When we become Christians by being buried in baptism, or if we've started that and haven't been faithful, don't put off making correction for that. Go ahead and take care of that without waiting. If we can help in any way, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.
Jesus, the loving shepherd, calleth thee now to come. Enter the fold of safety, where there is rest and room. Come in the strength of manhood, come in the born of youth. Enter the fold of safety, enter the way of truth. Lovingly, tenderly calling his deep, wonder, wonder, come unto me. Patiently waiting, there standing I see, Jesus, my shepherd divine. Jesus, the loving shepherd, gave his dear life for thee. Tenderly now he's calling, wanderer, come to me. Faithful without his danger, come where the shepherd blessed. Enter the fold of safety, enter the place of rest. Lovingly, tenderly calling his
Holy Father in heaven, we thank you that you've granted us another day of life and wish to praise your high and holy name. And it is so refreshing and uplifting to be with fellow brothers and Christians. And we need to learn, dear God, to love each other with all our hearts. And even then, we can't approach the love you have for us. We thank you for this church. We thank you for Randy and the lessons he's able to bring. And the song leaders for their abilities. All the guys that work in this vineyard. Help us, dear God, not to be ashamed of you. When we see somebody in a grocery store who's walking on crutches, have the guts to go up and ask them how they're doing and what's going on in their lives and tell them you'd be praying for them. You'd be surprised how some people react to it. But we can't be shy because you said, if you're ashamed of me before man, I'll be ashamed of you before my Father. Help us, dear God, as we go through this week, to be aware that we're in a war with the devil. He's not just an occasional temptation. He's exactly what you said he was in the Bible. He's a roaring lion. And he knows every weakness we have, and that's where he attacks us. So help us to pray and pray often. This is our prayer, dear God, in your Son's holy name. We can never thank you enough for him. And we can never imagine what you went through, having to watch what was happening to him when he was being tortured and beaten and nails driven in his hands and feet. We can't imagine what that would be for us with our children. But we have feeble minds compared to you, and we can't fathom the degree of your love. But we know it's there. And we thank you, dear God, in Jesus' name. Amen.